You're listening to WBH Radio. I'm your host, William Holly. This is episode number 36, man. I want to thank you for stopping in to check it out. Definitely greatly appreciate it. I'm recording from the beautiful city of Greensboro, North Carolina. Now, if you haven't had the pleasure of spending time in the state of North Carolina, you're missing out. Man, it's kind of got the best of everything. You got beaches, you got mountains, you got plenty of open space and grasslands for the kids and the dogs to run around. It's a really cool place. In fact, my grandfather's from here, so I've spent many a days in North Carolina. But this trip is not a personal one. I'm out here on some business. A friend of mine who I know for my days working security moved out here a few years ago, and him and his partners opened a bar. And I came down here to explicitly express my interest in being a part of the new business endeavor they're about to embark on. They're getting ready to open up a second bar. And I came down here to say, hey, listen, I want in. And it's important for me to share that story because I think sometimes people give me a lot of credit for doing cool things. Like, yo, Will, you got to work with the Yankees. You had Aaron Judge in your podcast. But what they don't know is that started for me driving limousines, right? People don't understand kind of like sometimes the grunt work that goes into whatever cool things come about. So I think it's important for me to share those parts, right? Now, there's no guarantee that I'm going to get in on this business with them. They're not sure if they're taking investors. But God damn it, I took a chance, right? There's no guarantees. I jumped in my car with my dog, paid for my own hotel, and just came out here and expressed that to them. You know, and I think it's just imperative that I share that because I ain't got all the answers. But one thing's for certain is that I'm fighting hard to figure it out, taking chances, sacrificing, trying to get it done by any means. You know, we got to take chances. So if next year I'm drawing in $70,000 just sitting at my crib because I'm a partner in a restaurant that's grossing $2 million, which is quite feasible based on what they've done with their last business, understand where it came from. Right. And I'm fighting for freedom. And I challenge all of my friends to do the same. Because, man, it's getting spooky out there, son. It's getting spooky out there. Only a certain few number of people and businesses are controlling everything. And they deciding who gets a job and who doesn't. And, man, it's getting real scary. Like, all you need to know is goddamn Toys R Us went out of business. Man, that was an American staple. They put Toys R Us out of business. Shit. And we're going to start the podcast real soon, but I thought it was just important that I share that part. And I'll tell you this story before we get started with the podcast. This was back in May. This was back in May before I went to Germany and Amsterdam with my school. I had interviewed with the Philadelphia 76ers. It was a position right there in Camden, New Jersey, 2 hours from New York City, right outside Philadelphia at the practice facility. Working with the organization, you know, not a low level position. I was going to be working hand to hand with the players, kind of on the administrative side. And during the interview, on two separate occasions, the lady asked me, like, yo, why do you want this job? Kind of insinuating, like, yo, you too qualified for this. Like, this job is below you. And in my head, I'm like, I know, but it's not like y'all handing out any of the real gigs. It's not like y'all going to hand me the general manager position, the director of scouting or player personnel. So I got to take what's out there. And yes, I got passed over for the job. And in the email she wrote to me, she writes, you know, thank you, William Holly. You are one of the most qualified candidates. But we opted to go with someone we thought was a little bit more qualified. Man, I almost fell out of my chair when I read that shit. More qualified? You could have said anything in the world, man. But more qualified? Me, somebody that's worked for two professional organizations in the New York Yankees and the New York Rangers, somebody that played the game of basketball in college, coached at the college level, have a hand in building an AAU program right there in Brooklyn, New York, working on his doctorate degree in education and leadership, more qualified. So I did something that I've never done. And, you know, usually when you get passed over for these job experts and professionals, they will tell you, hey, you know, reach out to the organization and ask them exactly, where were you lacking? Where could you have been stronger in your presentation? Or where could you improve your resume? So I reached out to her and I asked that question. And you want to know what she told me? You want to know what she said back to me? Nothing. She ain't respond. What's she going to say? All right. So I just bring that story up to highlight, man. It's getting spooky out there. Less and less opportunities. And I'm fighting diligently for my freedom. And I challenge all my friends to do the same. My man Fem Boogie talk about he got an app, but shit, let's build it. My man Kelly George in Atlanta talk about he want to build a mobile car wash. Let's do it. It's getting spooky, man. But let's get into this podcast, episode number 36, WBH Radio. I'm your host, William Holly. The story out of the NFL weekend, especially in my neck of the woods, was the Giants' surprise win against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Giants winning 32-31 in a close one, led by their rookie quarterback, Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones put together a great performance, 336 yards passing, two TDs, and two rushing touchdowns. Now, I'm 34 years old. For most of my life, Mr. Eli Manning has been at the helm of the Giants franchise. Before him, it was a bunch of Kerry Collins and Dave Browns and Danny Cannells and little Kurt Warner. Something we've never seen as New Yorkers is a quarterback with the ability to run. We've never seen that from the quarterback position in the New York Giants jersey. And Daniel Jones showed us something last weekend that we never saw. Man, that was pretty damn cool. And I understand why Giants fans are excited. I was on the road that day. I didn't really get to catch all of it. But the highlights, man, to see him maneuver, I'm like, dog, that's the Giants franchise? We've never seen anything like that. And it wasn't just Daniel Jones. The Giants seemed to have another weapon. Evan Engram at the tight end position, 6 catches, 113 yards, 1 touchdown, was phenomenal. I remember watching the highlight of one play. Evan Engram is going up the sideline. He's running. And the announcer says, man, that guy's got some speed. I'm like, he ain't no Julio Jones. He ain't a DeSean Jackson. Then they said, that's the Giants tight end. I said, oh, damn, that's the tight end moving like that? He damn sure do have some speed, man. So that was a great win for the Giants. A lot for the fan base to be excited about. Unfortunately, Saquon Barkley went out, but that's the game of football. Now, after Daniel Jones' great win, of course, everybody went back to draft night when a lot of people were unhappy by the Giants' selection. They said, man, who is this kid? He played at Duke. He wasn't that impressive. So are those detractors now wrong? I would say not so fast. Because specifically, I know Stephen A. Smith. I remember Fenton had brought this up to me because we were recording a podcast that day. The episode Cobbling Asian. And the question was, why was he being picked over Dwayne Haskins, the black quarterback? That was the question. Everybody asked, what in Daniel Jones' resume says he should be picked over Dwayne Haskins? And the only thing they could come up with is, well, his college coach used to coach Eli and Peyton Manning. Is that fair? Right? Sports is supposed to be merit-based. It's not supposed to be who you know. That's why we love the game. Any people could come from the poorest neighborhood, the slums, know nothing. But if you could play the game, you should be rewarded based off of your skill. So those detractors aren't wrong because Daniel Jones had a great game the other day. Kudos to Daniel Jones. He looks like a prospect. He looks like a talent. Kudos to him. What the detractors were saying is, hey, this game should be merit-based. Right? It shouldn't be about your clique and who you know. Because the black quarterbacks, the kids from the inner cities who don't have the relationships that the Mannings have, how do they ever break through? And that's really what that beef was about. I know it was from where everybody I was listening to. You know, even when you look at head coach Sean McVay, one of the youngest coaches in NFL history. You know, nobody's questioning if he could coach or not. He brought his team to the Super Bowl. They look like they're a great team doing great things. Kudos to him. The question is, how do you even get that job? How do you even get a chance? And then you go back. His first position in coaching was, he was John Gruden's assistant back in Tampa Bay. How did he get that job? John Gruden knew his granddaddy who used to be a general manager of the 49ers. Like, it's starting to become an incestuous cult. And if you're on the outside, you never get to break in. So that's the only beef, man. The detractors, they weren't wrong. Daniel Jones, he's cool. He's a talent. Kudos to him. But that process is starting to get spooky, right? They starting to just take care of their own. Well, if they do that, how the outsiders getting? Now, with Daniel Jones's ascension to the starting quarterback position, that means the great Eli Manning gets demoted. We know Eli's resume, long-time Giants quarterback, two-time Super Bowl champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP. And a lot of conversation that goes on about the Giants' handling of him. You know, the way they demoted him. Could they have done a better job? And the question I would ask is, what else do you want them to do? How do you handle an aging quarterback? You sit his ass down. What do you want an organization to do? To coddle him? Right? To send a singing telegram? You say Eli Manning has accomplished the great things. Man, he won two Super Bowls. And guess what? He was compensated for those two Super Bowls handsomely. And guess what? When he won those two Super Bowls, they gave him two nice shiny rings. They even gave him two parades in the middle of New York City, right down the Canyon of Heroes. Outside of that, the organization owes him nothing. The sport owes him nothing. Right? We lose track of why we enjoy these games. They're competitive. Shit. Cutthroat. Only the strong survive. That's why we love these games, right? When guys like Eli Manning come in the league, essentially what they're doing is they're taking someone's job. Someone who was in the league the year prior will no longer be there. And we love it and we celebrate it. So they owe it to the game. They go out the same way, right? You don't get any special treatment. The organization doesn't owe you anything extra. You've been compensated for all your great work. And it just becomes cringeworthy when teams and leagues try to put together these farewell tours or they coddle these stars. I remember when Derek Jeter was retiring, it was unbearable to watch each team give him a gift. I don't want to see Derek Jeter get a gift from the Red Sox. He's been trying to take their head off for 15, 20 years. That's the nature of the beast, cutthroat. You do your work, do your career, and you move on. Right? So I just don't understand that conversation of how to handle an aging star. Dog, you perform or you get out the way. Right? The Giants owe Eli nothing. New York City owes Eli nothing. The NFL owes Eli nothing. Thanks for the years, bro. But in all honesty, I do wish that Eli gets traded somewhere where his services could be of use. You know, maybe a team with a strong defense. Let him go over there and call some plays similar to the way his brother Peyton did at the end of his career. I think he's still useful. But a lot for the Giants to be excited about. Now, as Eli starts to wind down towards the end of his career, of course, the conversation comes up of whether he's a Hall of Famer. And in fact, before I do these shows, I reach out to my friends. I say, yo, what you want to hear? And a couple of them mentioned, like, yo, let's hear that Eli Hall of Fame conversation. So let's have it. Is Eli going to the Hall of Fame? Yes. The end. In short, the answer is yes. Of course he's going to the Hall of Fame. Now, what I think is the more interesting conversation is why. And I don't think it has to do with what he's done on the field, that alone. I think it's the influence of his brother, Peyton Manning, and his dad, Archie Manning. Right? If you look at these Hall of Fames, how do these guys get in? They get voted in by the writers. Right? And these writers are human beings, right? They're not exactly unbiased. They have people they like and don't like. We just saw it with Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens is somebody that wasn't too popular with the media. They try to hold him out. They kept him out for years trying to teach him a lesson. When you and I both know his accomplishments on the field warranted him being in the Hall of Fame on the first shot. You know, so if you look at this podcast thus far, the theme is like, yo, things ain't really merit-based. So, of course, Eli's going to get in. The writers are going to ensure that Peyton Manning and Archie Manning are going to impose their will. You think Peter King of Sports Illustrated ain't going to vote for Eli? Peyton and Archie will be on that phone the next day. Yo, Peter, what's up? Why you ain't vote for my guy? You know, and the buff of my point about the media's influence, who they like and who they don't like. Chris Carter was a wide receiver in the NFL, borderline Hall of Famer. He didn't get in a couple times. Guess what? You put his ass on ESPN and Fox Sports 1 as a member of the media. He now having dinner and lunch and yuck it up with these guys. He got in. Randy Moss was somebody the media couldn't stand. They thought he was a malcontent. They thought he was rude. He had the mooning incident on his resume. The straight cash homie. People thought he quit on the Raiders. You put him on ESPN NFL Sunday Countdown, yucking it up with the media. Now he in the Hall of Fame. First ballot. Now don't get me wrong. Of course, Moss deserves to be in there. But the position of wide receiver, rarely do they go in on the first ballot. His media brethren, they took care of him, put him in there. So if you think Eli ain't going, you fooling yourself. The problem is, it ain't really merit-based. Now, how many of you know about Peyton Manning's sexual assault issue while he was at the College of Tennessee? It ain't been really publicized the way some of the other cases have been. You know, and if you do your research and you look into it, he's accused of exposing his genitals to a female who was working on the medical staff at Tennessee. If you look at some of the things that went on around that case, man, Archie Manning flexing his muscle, trying to influence the media, how he said things like, yo, she was a lady that would go into dorm rooms and have sex with the black players. Huh? What that got to do with your son exposing his genitals to her? And they try to play her like she was some young student. She was a PhD. But you know what? They like, y'all not going to derail Peyton Manning's career before it gets started. And they did whatever they did, influenced their friends, their media, and it really got out. Take a look when you have a chance. Look at the things that Peter King said about it. It's a 20-year-old controversy. They don't say that about Ray Rice. They don't say that about OJ. Those people taking care of themselves, man. So mark my word, Eli will be in there. That ain't even a question, man. What else we got going on, man? It's fall. Month of September. That means we're getting close to October. In October, what takes place? The Fall Classic, the World Series. And the New York Yankees are headed to the playoffs yet again. But unfortunately, they're going to have to go into the playoffs without their winningest pitcher this season. That is the young Dominican pitcher, Domingo Germán. This season, he has a team best 18-4 record. Unfortunately, he got caught up with a domestic violence charge against his wife. I take that back. I don't think it was a charge. I think the Major League Baseball just learned of an incident. And they decided to suspend him. It wasn't the Yankees. It was the league that jumped in and suspended him. Sad case all around. Nobody wins, man. That's got to be a gut punch for the Yankees. They battled injuries all year. And here they are, getting ready to make their playoff run. Finally getting healthy. Giancarlo Stanton is back. Luis Severino is back. And boom. Just like that, their number one pitcher is gone. Man, that is tough for that organization. And just to highlight how challenging I believe that was, I was reading in articles that the general manager of the Yankees, Brian Cashman, he went into the clubhouse to address the team. Now, you guys know I worked in that clubhouse in 2017. Listen, the manager never addressed the team as a whole in the clubhouse. I seen him do it two or three times in the playoffs. Right? I tell y'all, that clubhouse is their sanctuary. The people don't bother them there. So for the general manager to walk in and hold court in the middle of a clubhouse just highlights, damn, how dire a situation they believed it to be. They believe they need to go in there and tell them players and pick them up and say, hey, it's going to be all right. Because I'm sure that was a gut punch, man. And again, it's just a sad situation all around. Thinking about the young pitcher, Mr. Domingo Germán. His very first game in the majors was June 11th, 2017. And guess what? Your boy was there. I remember walking him in to Yankee Stadium. And it's fun and exciting to be around players like Domingo Germán, young guys who are from a different country, because this whole experience is new to them. Watching him walk into Yankee Stadium for the very first time is like watching, it's like watching you. Like, the person listening right now, it's like watching you walk in the Yankee Stadium. Imagine somebody snatching you up and say, yo, tomorrow you're going to pitch in Yankee Stadium. You would be in there with bright eyes, with your phone out. Like, man, I'm really here. That's what it was like walking him into that building. Because you got to understand these guys' path, right? The Yankee team, they go to spring training, right? We're in Tampa Bay for 2 months. It's about maybe 80 players. You know, it's a minimal facility. It's still major league level, but it's spring training. So everybody's there. And then at the end of spring training, the 25 players that are in the big leagues, they go to New York City. The rest of the guys, they go to Hicksville, USA, wherever they may be playing. So they don't get to see the bright lights of Yankee Stadium in New York City. They don't get to make it to the show right out the gate. Some of them never make it. So that day, for whatever reason, I guess there was an injury or something, Domingo Germán got called up. And it was exciting to walk him in and to walk his wife in. You know, when you bring them in the facility, the family, they go into a family room. There's like babysitters in there for the children. You know, and I walk in there, I'm like, yo, I got a ticket for you. Like, the family is even surprised that, yes, you can go upstairs and watch your family member play. You're not stuck in this family room. Like, it's all new to them. And I try to paint that picture to highlight to you that, man, sometimes I look at these young families and I say, man, they ain't really equipped for all that comes along with being a major leaguer, with the money, with the visibility. It's a challenge. They from a different world. They ain't speaking a language. So it's not a surprise that there's trouble in the very first year that he's really in the spotlight. That can be a lot for a young family. I'm not absolving him for whatever he did. If he did commit a violent act against his wife, you know, I'm not into pointing blame. I'm trying to find resolutions. How can we help these young families? Because you got to think about it. She's from a different country. She don't speak the language, right? She might be stuck in an apartment. She's seeing him come and go. He on the news. He's a star now. You don't know what type of wedge is being drawn in between that relationship. She like, I want to go out. He like, I don't. You don't know. It's a lot for those young families, dog. And I remember being in that clubhouse like, man, a lot of people ain't going to make it. It ain't as simple as, you a major leaguer, give him a check, and then they going to succeed. So it's just a sad situation all around, man. When you think about the playoffs is when people can really make a name for themselves. One postseason and you could live forever, man. There's no telling what he would have been able to do, what kind of contract he would have demanded after this, what type of fame. Like, it only takes one playoff run and you can live forever. Shit, look at the Yankees manager, Aaron Boone. What do you know about Aaron Boone? That one home run he hit for the Yankees that allowed them to go to the World Series. What he do before that? I don't know. What he do after that? I don't remember. It's that one moment. And with Germán missing out on the playoffs, man, he cost his family a lot, man. This could derail his career forever, man. You know, and I hope him and his family, they're able to bounce back from this. And, you know, I always talk about sports, about you got the labor force, which is mostly people from humble beginnings, and they're being judged, they're being legislated by people who are not from their community. You know, so everybody, they just going to throw Germán to the wolves, suspend him. But, dog, I'm on. Let's prevent this. Let's get in here and help this young family. And, you know, when I think about things that I want to do in sports, you know, like, what position do I really want? Like, even work with the Yankees, I'm like, damn, what job do I really want? You know, and as I really start to think about it, like, damn, how can I put some programs together, like some player development, not just on the field, but off the field. you know, put something together for the wives so they can wake up every day and have something to look forward to, build their own confidence and not feel like they just attached to their husband. Like, what can we do? You know, this is not the Yankees' first spat with domestic violence. My man, Aroldis Chapman, he had an issue as well. He was suspended for multiple games. Like, I don't want to just fucking slam the book and send them on their way. No, I want to prevent this from happening again. And it's unfortunate that they're being judged by people that I think don't really understand or care about what really goes on. They just want to poke their chest and say, yeah, man, we got him. We suspended. That ain't a solution. You know, even when you look at the NFL and Ray Rice's situation, Ray Rice's wife, I think her name was Janae, she walked into the commissioner's office with him and said, you know what? It was an ugly situation, but it's a family situation. We going to iron it out. Man, people just trampled over her and ignored her. Get Ray Rice out of here. Get him out. Ignored her. Here's a full-fledged adult saying, listen, we're going to be all right. We're going to get it together. They ignored her. It was more about just crucifying that man. And where are all those people at today? Do they care if Janae Rice is okay? Do they care if her family has an income, if her child's are being fed? Nah. Nah. They just want to trample the dude. So, wishing all them young folks well, man. Wishing all them young folks well. One more piece on domestic violence. And, you know, I'm asking questions today because I don't know any answers, man. Since when did domestic violence become a crime that is viewed as, like, the worst thing ever? Like, when did we start ranking which crime is worse, passing judgment on who's a worse criminal than the next? You know, I don't get that, man. You know, it's like when you look at hip hop, like they talk about, oh, what R. Kelly did. Like, yeah, man, he's the scum of the earth, man. Yeah, he's trash. But let me get back to telling you how I pumped crack in the neighborhood for 15 years. Huh? So you got no problem poking your chest out and talking about you pump crack for 15 years? How many families you think you set back? How many generations you think you destroyed? Yeah, man, but I ain't urinate on anybody. But yeah, I pump crack, you know what I'm saying? How many 16, 17-year-old girls you think is lost in the street because their family was strung out on drugs, so they turn to prostitution and they strip it because they got to feed their younger siblings? Like, since when did we pass all this moral judgment, man? Leagues, oh, we standing firm on domestic violence. We squashing that out. But you let A-Rod prance around. He a drug abuser. He done fucking lied and cheated. Ryan Braun almost got hit. The guy, urine sample got fired. Like, when did we start ranking crimes, son? I'm not a religious man, but my understanding is a sin is a sin. It's all bad. We picking and choosing who we want to bury in. Who we want to give a pass to, man. It's spooky out there. What else we had going on this weekend, man? Unfortunately, we didn't get to see Antonio Brown on the field because he got cut by the Patriots. Yo, do I have to talk about Antonio? Because I really don't want to. Last time I did a podcast, I said that I believe there was a lot of noise around him. But until that point, I don't believe he did anything wrong. Yeah, it was kind of annoying and obnoxious, but nothing that warranted his career ending. But the other day, when he decided to text a woman who was a part of a Sports Illustrated article speaking out against him, saying that she did a painting in his crib and he made her feel uncomfortable. For him to send a text to her, threatening her, asking people in his camp to investigate her. During that time when he's already under investigation for what he did with the trainer, that's just showing a dude that don't get it. Like, you just don't get it, son. My man DA called me like, yo, well, he don't get it, son. And after that, I couldn't defend him, man. It made sense that the Patriots cut him. Like, listen, dog, you already in trouble and you kicking up more dust. You already under civil liability. They got a lawsuit coming against you for what you did with Brittany Taylor. And now another woman comes out. She cooperates with Sports Illustrated. And you going to put on a mass text, send pictures of her kids. Oh, see, we ain't even, you just don't understand the game that's being played. Like, dog, you got to sit still, be quiet until this all blows over. But you just so out of control, you just had to text him, man. So it makes sense why the Patriots cut his ass. Now, he went on social media and he tweeted something about Robert Kraft. He said, Robert Kraft got in trouble. Nothing happens. He said, AB under investigation. He gets fired. He said, different strokes for different folks. Nah, I didn't get that until I listened to my man Dan Levitard. Different strokes, get it. Robert Kraft got caught in a massage parlor getting a hand job, different strokes. AB, it was funny as hell. You got it. But getting back in the NFL, that's not the way, son. Them billionaires don't like to be called out. They ain't used to being challenged or being talked down against. So Mr. Antonio Brown got an uphill battle coming his way. He said he don't want to play football again. I would be impressed if he didn't. Because if you go back to his appearance on LeBron James' show, The Barbershop or The Shop, he was poking fun at guys like Jerry Rice and Shannon Sharp for having to turn to TV right after their playing career was over. He said, man, these dudes ain't never had a plan. I took that as AB got a retirement plan. He's ready for life after football. That's what I took that as. So let's see. Let's see. The NFLPA filed a grievance on his behalf because the Patriots didn't pay him his signing bonus. They believe he's actually due that money. So we'll see how that plays out. If he's able to get some of that money and some of the Raiders' money, that'd be a quick flip. Like, you play one game and came up with a couple million, like, you'd be winning. But we'll see how that go. His agent, Drew Rosenhaus, went on the Warren Sapp podcast the other day and said, yeah, AB's interested in playing. Teams are interested. But that might just be agent bullshit. We'll see. Drew Rosenhaus has that in his history. If you go back to when Willis McGahee was drafted out of Miami after tearing some ligaments in his knee, Drew Rosenhaus was telling teams, yeah, teams are interested, which made the Buffalo Bills take a gamble on him in the first round. When the story came out, Drew Rosenhaus was bullshit. So, we'll see. We'll see. Let me see what else I got here on the docket. What we got going on? Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey, the Jacksonville Jaguars. He got into a sideline dispute with his coach. And after that, he came out and said, listen, I want to be traded. After that dispute, he played in a game. And then after that game, he told the Jaguars he was sick. He ain't coming to practice. And just when you were hoping his sickness was up, he said, listen, I'm taking some time because my second child is being born. So Jalen Ramsey, he don't want to be with the Jaguars. And, you know, that brings up the conversation of player empowerment. All right. The NFL players trying to move more into the direction of controlling their own destiny, similar to that of the NBA players. Now, I believe if you want to improve your situation, it all starts with sacrifice, right? What sacrifice, Will? When you go to the negotiating table with the owners, those collective bargaining agreements, that is when you fight for everything that you want. Back in 2011, the last time the players sat down with ownership, there was like a 130-day lockout, and they finally came to an agreement. And in that agreement, right, my humble opinion, the players got slaughtered. Why did they get slaughtered? Because they were so in a rush to get back to slamming their head against one another that they caved in. They will tell you that they won, but I don't believe so. And let's take a look. Some of the highlights from that collective bargaining agreement is, well, the owners got 52% of football revenue. 52%. In the agreement prior to that, the owners only had 47%. So the players took an L financially. They gave up more money. Why? Who knows? When it comes to discipline, Roger Goodell is the sole arbitrator, the judge, the jury, the executioner. But the players do have a right to appeal. Appeal in front of who? Roger Goodell. So they took that L too. And one of the areas that the players thought they won, and I went back and I read some articles, kind of get a feel for the temperature, what was going on at that time. The players, they felt like they gave up some money in the rookie contracts, right? But you got to understand, these are current players negotiating, so they don't care about rookie contracts. They don't care about incoming players. We don't care about rookie contract rates. Do whatever you want to that. So the owners opted to cut those rookie contracts down. Like, nah, we don't want to pay rookies out the gate, man. Let them show something first. And the players didn't think enough of that to fight for, because, again, they're in the league already. We don't care about the rookies coming in. Let them deal with that. So let's see what has taken place since then, right? Prior to that collective bargaining agreement of 2011, let's take a look at some of the rookie contracts. 2008, Jake Long was drafted by the Miami Dolphins, I believe. He signed for 5 years, $58 million. 2009, Matthew Stafford, he signed for 6 years, 72. 2010, Sam Bradford, 6 years, 78 million before he ever threw a pass. Big numbers, right? But then comes the CBA of 2011. The players choose not to really fight for rookie contracts. Doesn't matter. It's insignificant. Who cares about the players coming in? And take a look at the drop-off, right? I told you Sam Bradford was 2010 at 6 years, $78 million. The very next year, 2011, number one draft pick overall, Cam Newton. 4 years, $22 million. 50-plus million less than the rookie class before him. After Cam Newton was Andrew Luck. 4 years, $22 million. Rookie deal. $50 million less than Sam Bradford. $50 million less than Matthew Stafford. Now, we don't cry and boo-hoo for Cam Newton and Andrew Luck, because during their career, they end up making some money. But what about guys like Le'Veon Bell, Jalen Ramsey, who are stuck in these rookie deals that are paying them less than they're worth? When you come into the NFL, they own you for 4 years if you're a first or second round draft pick. 4 years. Well, hell, the average NFL career is 3.5. So in your prime years, when you're the best version of yourself, you're making the least money. That's why you see Le'Veon Bell disgruntled. That's why you see Ezekiel Elliott holding out. That's why you see Jalen Ramsey frustrated, but he got no leverage. And if you look at the San Diego Chargers, Melvin Gordon, he's been holding out all year. But guess what? He about to bring his ass back to the NFL because he ain't got no leverage. He's still in his rookie deal. They ain't got to pay him. They ain't got to trade him. So these players that's disgruntled and unhappy, you only got the players before you to blame because they ain't want to fight for the incoming rookies. And now this is what we see. Ezekiel Elliott, he lucked out. Jerry Jones paid him. He ain't have to. Todd Gurley lucked out. The Rams chose to pay him. But these other guys, they ain't getting paid. In the league, they don't have to because you players didn't want to fight for it. And y'all running around here pouting and crying about stuff, wanting to be the NBA players. You got to fight when it's your turn to fight. You got to be fearless. You got to sacrifice. And I've never seen you guys do it. So it's no surprise that you get the short end of the stick. Because if you ain't going to fight for you, why should anybody else? And another piece on this player empowerment. You know, I have, yeah, it's good, man. The players, yeah, they could be like the NBA guys. I would ask you, what metric are you using to come up with the conclusion that, yes, it's good for the NFL players to have more power? What metric are you using that they should follow the lead of the NBA players? Which league makes more money, the NFL or the NBA? The NFL, clearly. Right? You should follow the blueprint in NBA players. Every time I read up on the NBA, it says attendance is down. Every time I read up on the NBA, they say viewership is down. Why would the NFL want to follow the blueprint of the NBA? What metric are you using? The NBA commissioner came out and said, yo, we might have to start our LA games earlier, our West Coast games earlier, because nobody's watching. I checked today, 40 of the top 50 sporting events in 2018, 40 of the top 50 most viewed sporting events of 2018 were NFL games. Why would they be following the blueprint of somebody in their rear? I was looking up on the Forbes list, top 50 most valuable franchises in the world, right? So we're not just talking football. We're not just talking basketball. We talking soccer. We talking Barcelona, Arsenal, Madrid, all those teams. Top 50 teams. 29 of the NFL's 32 teams are on that list, while only 7 of the NBA's 30s are on the list. Right? Why would the NFL want to see player empowerment? Seems like their blueprint is working just fine. Now, I understand why the players would want it. And good luck getting it. But from a league standpoint, yeah, the league should want this, you know, because, yeah, players, man, them owners laughing at you. Please. 29 of their 32 franchises on the top 50 list. Most valuable franchises in the world. You know, the Boston Celtics, one of the most historical franchises in the NBA. Bill Russell, Bob Cousy, Larry Bird. The Boston Garden. Do you know the New York Jets are more valuable than the Boston Celtics? The lowly freaking Jets. So good luck with your player empowerment, man. You know, I haven't seen one reason why the NFL would want to see that happen. And you see they fighting hard against it. They disrespect you at every turn. And y'all ain't doing anything about it. And some fans feel sorry for you. I don't. Because whatever you want in this world, you got to fight. And y'all ain't willing to do it, so whatever you get, you deserve. About to get out of here, man. One more thing I want to discuss. You know, shout out to all my friends, man, who really helped me out coming up with some topics. I was on YouTube the other day. You know, they suggest videos. Of course, First Take is there. Undisputed is there. And there was one video, and it was Stephen A. Smith. He was talking about Troy Aikman speaking out against Patrick Mahomes. Now, I didn't watch it, but I'm like, Troy Aikman, he don't really strike me as the guy to take shots at players, but okay. And then I asked my boy Fenn about topics. He was like, yo, Troy Aikman hating on Mahomes. I'm like, damn, so that's twice I've seen it. I said, let me take a look and see what happened. So what happened is, the Atlantic Kansas City, I guess that's a publication out there, they tweeted something about Patrick Mahomes, one of the reporters. And it starts with, I see why am I. Yo, I had to Google that. I'm not even going to lie. In case you missed it. So it says, in case you missed it, Patrick Mahomes has thrown 36% of Troy Aikman's career touchdowns in only 8% of the games. Right? So that reporter is showing that Patrick Mahomes has accomplished a lot of great things in a short amount of time. Troy Aikman's response, you know, he put the same, in case you missed it. Talk to me when he has 33% of my Super Bowl titles. You know, the reporter went with percentages, has thrown 30% of Troy Aikman's career touchdowns, about 8% of games. So Aikman came back. Talk to me when he has 33% of my Super Bowl titles. Now, this was presented as Troy Aikman hating. Quite the freaking contrary. You know, to me, this was not Troy Aikman hating. In fact, this is not even Troy Aikman addressing Patrick Mahomes. This is Troy Aikman talking to that reporter. Listen, if you want to highlight Patrick Mahomes' greatness, please do so. But keep my name the hell out of it. I'm over here minding my business. If you want to make a point at how great Patrick Mahomes is, you don't need to call my name. And Troy Aikman has said that in subsequent interviews. Yo, listen, Mahomes is great, dog. But I'm over here minding my business. I'm doing broadcasting my games. I'm a dad living the life of a Dallas Cowboy Super Bowl winning quarterback. You do not have to call my name to highlight Mahomes' greatness. Don't use me as a stat. Don't use me as a way to paint a picture. Nah, dog, I'm minding my business. I don't want to come to my social media account and see all people in my mentions. Troy Aikman wasn't even close to hating. He told that reporter, man, sit your ass down. That's what that was about. And I love it. And another thing with these stat nerds, man, and these guys that want to compare errors, man. And Troy Aikman went on to say this, man. And I'm going to paraphrase it. Dog, it's two different games. When Troy Aikman played, defensive greats like Reggie White, Lawrence Taylor, Ronnie Lott, they could literally assault him. Body slam him, grab him by the collar, hit him after he released the ball, lay on him. In today's game, that can't be done. The quarterback is untouchable. You saw the referee said the other day, stay off of Tom. Stay off of Tom Brady, he told the defender. The rules are in play for the quarterback to succeed. That is why we are seeing phenomenal offensive numbers. Right? That's not a knock against Mahomes. He is great. But, dog, Aikman and them boys playing in a different era. Okay, just to highlight that, I was looking at the top yardage list on the NFL history. Matt Ryan has more passing yards than Joe Montana. You think Matt Ryan's better than Joe? He ain't. Different eras, man. A totally different game. The offenses is wide open. Defenses can't do shit. Phillip Rivers got more passing yards than John Elway. You think he's better? No! And I'm proud of Troy Aikman for standing up. Like, come on, stop it, dog. Patrick Mahomes' career could end next week. Keep my name out your mouth, man. I'm somebody that took the hits, took the lumps, got up time and time again in a more brutal era, performed under the brightest lights that is Dallas with that star on my helmet, and delivered. Leave me alone. Leave me the hell alone, man. Yo, that's episode number, episode number 36? That was episode number 36, man. As always, try to get better. I appreciate you. And WBH Radio, I'm William Holly, man, signing off from Greensboro, North Carolina, man. Catch y'all next time.